Well, let's bring in a Birchie kid because it's what we do on Fridays. Hey, man, I know you're not necessarily at Allen Park. I'm guessing you're not at Allen Park with it being on the bye
week. I'm currently in Connecticut getting ready for a wedding this weekend, but this segment means so much to me that I put aside wedding prep to come on and talk to you guys.
What a gentleman. What a gentleman. I really appreciate it. We all appreciate it, Birchie. Will Birchfield, our writer here at 97, won the ticket, our extraordinaire. Of course, you see Birchie on Sunday nights and Sunday afternoons of the broadcast crew with Dan Miller on Fox 2. So this week, obviously, Lions aren't playing, but it doesn't mean things don't happen still with the Lions. I know we've been talking a lot for a whole year about how the Lions still need to address who plays opposite Aiden Hutchinson. Have you heard anything about any rumblings of bringing guys in to work them out as a possible defensive end?
No, I haven't heard that. And sorry if you can hear a buzzing above me. Apparently, I'm sitting beneath an airbase right now. So apologies for any background noise. No, I haven't heard rumblings on that front. I think that we have come to know this Lions team as an organization that really trusts, and some might say overtrust, its internal depth. And I think they feel pretty good about the way Josh Pascal has stepped in there through two games. It's interesting because you keep hearing Dan Campbell and others rave about Pascal's performance, and it doesn't really look like he's done that much when you size up the box score after each game. But what they can trust Pascal to do is sort of what they can't trust James Houston to do, and that's to play within the principles of their defense. And another little shameless self-promotion, Justin Rogers and I on the Detroit Football Network podcast discussed this sort of dilemma and clash in playing styles this week on our latest episode. But I think they really like the fact that Pascal plays similarly to Marcus Davenport as that big end who can set the edge and play with some violence and force. Now, not as much as Davenport, who, as Graham Glasgow said, will headbutt the you-know-what out of you. But they know that Pascal will help them crush the pocket on the other end without creating seams for quarterbacks to escape. And so I think they feel pretty good about where they stand at that position entering the second quarter of the season.
They might, but the other side of that is what you talked about there with James Houston. I've always been a big James Houston guy. Hey, once it gets healthy again, hopefully we see what he was, second half of his rookie season. And yet he's out there, had more snaps this past week than he did the previous week against Tampa. But unfortunately, what you see in James Houston was he lined up offside a couple of times and doesn't really show up again as a pass rusher. And it's got to be frustrating for him. I know it's frustrating for the fans, but what are you gauging that the responses from him? Are they just trying to get something out of him in practice where he shows up more, or is this a problem?
Yeah, well, I think they wanted to see and take advantage of that opportunity on Monday. And like you said, he didn't. I mean, he probably hurt his cause in terms of finding himself more snaps in the second quarter of the season and even beyond that. I think the way that James Houston rushes doesn't align with the way they want their pass rushers opposite Hutchinson to operate. And I know they looked great as a tandem 2 years ago. That was a long time ago. I mean, Houston has only played, I guess now it's like 30 defensive snaps since his breakout rookie season. That feels like it's pretty far in the rear view. He's obviously super bendy. That's always been his strength. He can get around you with speed, but he also puts himself at risk of creating big seams in the pocket for the quarterback while doing that. And I don't want to say that he is like freestyling or doing things that the coaching staff isn't asking him to do, but I just don't know if he has the rushing style when it comes to power and physicality on the edge opposite Hutchinson that they're seeking. And I think that's why we haven't seen him play as much as a player like Pascal.
Yeah, and I mean, he's clearly not back to the level that he was his rookie season either, and that's not going to help. Look, this is it's the bye week, and normally when it happens after four games, I think people are like, oh, that's too early. Oh, I wish it were, a few more weeks into the season. But does it come at a really good time for the Lions right now?
Yeah, it feels like it. Usually you see that early bye and you think that it's a disadvantage for your team, but it feels like it's the right time for these guys. I mean, it'll help to hopefully have a healthy Frank Ragnow back on the other side of this bye. You hope that it means Derek Barnes has to miss minimal time. I thought his absence was really noticeable on Monday night. They'll hope to get him back as soon as possible. And, you know, otherwise on the injury front, I think they're in pretty good shape through four games. But, yeah, I think it will also lead to an even more fired up team in week six in Dallas. I mean, when Dan Campbell talked about, you know, having their own targets on their schedule, as he called it, their I'll say their pit list. I think it rhymes with pit. Dallas was definitely on that list. I mean, that's a team that I know they have circled over and over again. And having 2 weeks to salivate over this matchup heading down there is going to lead to just a fired up team next Sunday. And hopefully it's a team with Frank Ragnow. I don't know how they're going to tell Frank Ragnow he has to miss two games, let alone one. So he might just force his way onto the field next Sunday.
Yeah, it's almost too. It's. I wouldn't imagine that Barnes is going to be back for that game, which is kind of too bad because I'm sure he'd love to get some redemption after what happened last year with the opportunity to hit Dak Prescott in the end zone for his safety, which could have been a kill shot early in that game and unfortunately turned into that ridiculous touchdown pass.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And I think the Lions are still waiting to see how long Barnes is going to be out. I know they said after the initial diagnosis that, you know, they weren't sure yet whether or not he would need surgery. They kind of wanted to see the injury heal on its own while he was on IR for at least 4 weeks and then maybe reassess and see whether surgery was required. So I think the duration of his absence is still very much to be determined. But, man, he was doing so much for this defense through his first three games, from sometimes playing in the slot to obviously rushing as the strong side linebacker to playing a big role in setting the edge against the run, that without him, I thought they were exposed. I mean, Kenneth Walker didn't really do anything on the interior, but he gutted them on the outside. And we've seen Barnes and Brian Branch, who's probably their best tackling player in the secondary. Walker took advantage of an undermanned unit. And they talk a lot about their linebacking depth, and I'll tell you what, like Trevor Nowoski showed up a little bit on tape in that game against the Seahawks. Only a few snaps, but I think he had a few pressures within those snaps, and I think we'll see more of him on the other side of the bye. I didn't think Ben Neiman quite rose to the occasion, but I thought that Nowoski stood out, and obviously with Campbell and Anzalone and Rodrigo, it's a good, solid trio. But I think we'll see a little bit more of Trevor Nowoski, as we all assumed when the season started, that he would play a big role at this point in the season.
Will Birchfield joins us here, 97 on the ticket. Gator with you today. Doug had to take off to get ready for the football game and has to fly out of town for the game tomorrow night against Washington.
Notice I didn't take the day off, though, Gator. I mean, I prioritized Carson Anderson, despite Carson not prioritizing his own show.
Right, exactly. And I appreciate that out of you more than you know. Consummate pro. Look, speaking of a consummate pro, Jared Goff was perfect in the game, 18 for 18, 292 yards, couple of touchdown passes. He caught the touchdown pass from Amon-Ra St. Brown. And yet, if you look at a box score and start looking at different guys and their stats, it still feels like even though he was perfect and the team was perfect offensively, that there's still so much more that they can do offensively. I mean, we still have yet to really start up with Amon-Ra St. Brown as a receiver in this offense this season.
Yeah, I've been saying that now for a couple of weeks. Like, I don't think we have seen this offense play a complete game, and they're still top five in yards, and obviously points is catching up now too. But Monday night was definitely that unit as we've come to know it over the past 2.5 seasons. But it's funny, like, you asked Jared about his 18 for 18 record-setting day, and I think one of the first things he did was point to the safety he took and that it prevented him from hitting Tim Patrick for a big game potentially on that play. So he leaves that game feeling like they could have done more too. And how about Tim Patrick? It feels like he is beginning maybe to answer that wide receiver three question that we all were in angst about for almost all of training camp and even the first three games. It seems like he's sort of a natural physical replica of Josh Reynolds. And in some ways, Reynolds replaced Patrick in Denver. Well, maybe Patrick can replace Reynolds in Detroit. And, you know, he's talked about having more and more chemistry with Goff over the past 2-3 weeks. And he said, you know, when it really gets down to it, and you know, I've had 3 to 4 months of practice time with Jared, he said, quote, it's going to be beautiful. So that's something to look forward to in the second half of the year. And it does seem like he's beginning to show up on tape more and more. And, you know, it's funny, we hear the rumblings about Devontae Adams and people have linked him to Detroit, but like if you bring Devontae Adams here, what is he going to be, wide receiver 3, 2? I mean, like, they have so many mouths to feed already that it would seem like that's just adding to an embarrassment of riches.
It would, and yet I'll take him.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not going to say no. Yeah, I mean, it depends on what the asking price would be. Switching gears, you're a Tiger guy too. You're always at Comerica Park covering the team. This run they're on is spectacular. They just disposed of the Houston Astros in the wild card series. Now they get ready for the gribe, as we like to call them, the Guardians. How do you see this playing out?
So I think the defining matchup of this series is Tigers pitchers against the duo of Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor, who are basically Cleveland's offense. I mean, no disrespect to Stephen Kwan and others, but these guys account for pretty much all of their power and middle of the order production. And Ramirez against the Tigers this year was 17 for 49, which is a .347 average. Not bad. He slugged almost 800, and Naylor was 12 for 40, which is .300, and he slugged almost 600. But Gator, of Jose Ramirez's 5 home runs, 4 came against Brian Sammons, Joey Wentz, and Jack Flaherty. And of Josh Naylor's 3 home runs, they came against Kenta Maeda, and Alex Faedo. All to say, this is a very different pitching staff that they're about to see in the ALDS. And I think if the Tigers can hold them in check, just like they did with Bregman, Altuve, Tucker, and Alvarez, they'll be in pretty good shape to win this series.
Yeah, I've been of the opinion that I do not pitch to Jose Ramirez. I walk him. If there's a base open, I'll give it to him. I don't want to pitch to him. And if it means that I got to pitch to Josh Naylor with a man on, okay. But I don't want Jose Ramirez having the opportunity to come to the plate and do damage.
Yeah, well, and remember, there was one game this year where Hinch intentionally walked Jose Ramirez not once, not twice, but 3 times. So I don't think he's going to let Jose Ramirez beat them this series either. Now, obviously, when you've got a guy like Skubal on the mound in game 2 and maybe game 5, you're going to let your best attack their best. But I agree. If Jose comes up with bases empty or bases occupied, I think they'll consider strongly walking him. But again, that 3 intentional walk game was before the Tigers were in such a roll with their pitching staff. And I think they have so much faith in all of their guys now that in the same way they went after Tucker, Alvarez, Bregman, and Altuve, they might go after Jose Ramirez in this series.
Sounds great, Will. Enjoy yourself out in Connecticut. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Will Birchfield from 971theticket.com joining us as he does every Friday. Our live report from Allen Park. This one out there in Connecticut. Nice. We'll talk to you next. 248-539-9797 as we gear up for the Tigers' big playoff series against Cleveland. It begins tomorrow afternoon, a 1 o'clock game. Of course, you'll hear every pitch right here on your home for Tigers baseball. 97.1 The Ticket.